I'm Reverend Oswin. I'm a monk at Shasta Abbey. I did my training there until Reverend Master Jiu died. I went up to our small temple in Eugene, Oregon. I was there for 14 years and now have been back at Shasta for the past 3 years. So thank you for being here and thank you for giving me the opportunity to join you in offering the ceremony to Dogen. What I wanted to talk about and what I presented sort of as a theme for the Dharma weekend was Dogen's approach to scriptures. I don't know that it's unique to him, but at least at the time it was unique. And it was something that he had not encountered so far in all of his study and practice. It has a importance to us because it's what informs our daily practice. Because what Dogen was saying, we actually want to practice the scriptures. What does that mean, practice the scriptures? First, a little historical context. Dogen started out in what was called Tendai Buddhism in Japan. It was very eclectic. It kind of included all the scriptures. He was a very brilliant person. He read the whole Chinese Tripitaka. If he could have figured things out in his head, he would have. But he found that approach was lacking something for him. So then they recommended he go and study with a master who's recently back from China in Rinzai Zen. So he does that, and he does that for 7 years. And something is still unsettled. So he, together with his teacher, go to China, and it's there that he encountered our particular tradition, the serene reflection meditation. When we talk about serene reflection meditation, when we talk about zazen, sitting meditation, it can mean two different things. One, it can refer to just our practice of actually sitting and meditating formally, but it can also refer to the mind frame that we then bring to everyday life. We want to be practicing zazen, when we're eating, when we're washing dishes, when we're walking, over to the hall or driving home. It's really not mindfulness as presented in some of the other traditions. It's every minute zen or every minute zazen. We sometimes call it working meditation, which isn't the best phrase because you want to do it when you're not working as well. But we haven't come up with anything better. Okay. I call it daily life practice. We're practicing our zazen in everything that we do. It breaks down the distinction between sacred and secular. Okay. One of the things that makes Dogen difficult to understand in his writings is he's continually, I think the phrase is pushing the envelope, in terms of our understanding about reality, with a capital R. He doesn't let you cling to any sort of duality. You got the rules for meditation where he's teaching us to go beyond right and wrong and good and evil, and he just keeps pushing us. We can't cling to any set of opposites. And it's the same way when we come to thinking about our practice and looking at our practice. He shifts the focus from kind of studying scriptures, kind of as the first thing, and then you practice, and then you have realization. Okay, that's the conventional way it was done, may still be done. He turns it around and says realization comes first. And then you practice, and then you get the scriptures. Okay. This is based on the fact that he, again, in this insisting that You can't cling to any set of duality. It said that training and enlightenment, practice and realization are one. Okay. So you start from a place of unity. Okay. You start from a place of original purity. Okay. And then you practice. Okay. So the realization comes first, and then the practice, and then the scriptures come last. They illuminate the practice. Now, Dogen is famous, for instance, there's a line from the Parinirvana scripture which he quotes. It's usually translated, "All beings have the Buddha nature." And he's often kind of playing with words, and he says, well, actually, no, it should be, "All beings are the Buddha nature." Because there aren't beings separate over here, and the Buddha nature is over there, and you're trying to get it. Okay, there's no having. We're already one in the Buddha nature. Okay. This is the question that sent him to China, was, well, if we already have the Buddha nature, why do we have to practice? Okay. Why aren't we, you know, why don't we feel enlightened? Why don't we act enlightened? And that was the question that kept driving him. You know, to these various teachers, to China. It was a very dangerous trip. His teacher died while they were in China. His teacher didn't make it back. So Dogen says, rather than studying scriptures, if you will, kind of intellectually, you know, with our rational mind, we try to study them with our non-rational mind. Okay. Dogen is not anti-intellectual. He's just saying there's something else. There's something in addition. And that's why he teaches us to practice scriptures, to make the scriptures our daily life. And in one of the selections that we read this weekend, you know, Dogen is saying, well, everything is the Dharma. Everything is a scripture. Each one of us is a scripture. The mountains and rivers are scriptures. Now, everything in the universe is a scripture, because everything is always teaching us. Okay? And yes, the written scriptures are valuable. And everything else is as well. Okay. One thing Dogen is, another historical bit, is that he was also responding to a lot of people who were saying, well, all you need is meditation. You don't need the precepts. You don't need the scriptures. You know, so they're kind of chucking them out the window. And he feels that's an error in the opposite direction. You know, he feels that we need the scriptures. The scriptures are valuable. It's not, there's Zazen, but there's Zazen, if you will, kind of in a Buddhist context. Okay? There's Zazen which draws on the scriptures to verify itself, okay? And the scriptures can show us kind of where we're hitting the mark and where we may not be hitting the mark. Okay? So he's trying to find this middle way between a conventional way of approaching scriptures, kind of through study, you know, intellectual study, and on the other hand, this other trend was to ditch the scriptures and study altogether. So he's trying to find this middle way here of how do we make use of the scriptures? Okay, what part do they play in our practice? And in some of his writings, he's very clear. There's one chapter in the Shobogenzo called What the Buddha Taught. You know, and he's kind of very clearly saying, well, the Buddha taught the scriptures. Chuck out the scriptures if that's what the Buddha taught. He kept pointing us back to, and this is another characteristic of Dogen, he kept pointing us back to Shakyamuni Buddha. Okay. In some ways, Dogen was a reformer. Okay. He was trying to get back to the source. He was trying to get back to the original teachings that the Buddha gave, the historical Buddha. So he's telling us to open our eyes, open our minds, open our hearts to the Dharma. Open our hearts to everything that is teaching us. Everything wants us to be enlightened. Okay? Everything is, in you know, the truth, everything, you know. Great compassion is knocking on our door. It's banging on our door. But do we respond? Okay. The sitting meditation has enabled us to get quiet enough so we can hear that, you know, and respond to that. The other thing that's unique about Dogen and scriptures is that he takes them, if you personally, okay, he isn't trying to figure out a koan, as is used in Rinzai Zen. He's not trying to figure out what can seem to many of us a riddle. Okay. Those koans are intended to push people beyond the discriminatory mind. They work for some people. Okay. Dogen found they didn't work for him. Okay, and most of us are probably sitting here because that didn't work for us. Dogen shifts the focus to our daily life. He shifts our focus to what we call the cleansing of karma. Okay, he phrases it as there's the koan everyday life. Life presents us with a koan. Our life is a koan. Our life is a spiritual problem. Not in a problem that there's something wrong, but there's a question. Why are we here? No. Right there, why are we here? And for Dogen, he experienced impermanence very early in his life. He was illegitimate. We're not sure who his father was. His mother died when he was 7, so he grew up without, you know, parents. So he experienced great suffering quite early on, which was kind of the motivating factor to his becoming a monk and doing his training. You know, he had an existential question that he wanted to solve. Okay? He wanted resolution of his own suffering. It wasn't just an intellectual thing that he was trying to figure out. Okay? In the same way, that's the way our practice follows that same pattern or model, in that we come to practice, we sit, and then we begin to work with our own suffering. We begin to work with our own koan, you know, the koan of everyday life. Dogen says somewhere that the correct ordering of daily life is the first appearance of the koan. Okay. He said, as soon as you begin to try to sit, as soon as you try to begin to organize your life, you know, as soon as you begin to try to bring some order to your life and choose what's happening in it, the koan arises. Okay, you can't help that. But that's actually a good thing, because that shows you what you need to work on. That shows you your personal karmic inheritance that we're in this world to work on. And each of us has our own individual koan. Each of us has our own spiritual question. And one person's answer is not going to be the same as another person's answer. We each have to get our own answer. And that's why, again, the practice just pushes us back to sitting and going further and not being settled, you know, not settling for less than the truth, you know, not settling for less than what is really resolves our existential suffering. This is how a lot of our training in the monastery works. As monks, we we keep bumping into ourselves. You know, when you folks visit and train with the monks here, you bump into yourself. You know, we become aware of our own suffering. No one's doing anything intentional. It just happens that way. It's a curious thing about training, that something knows what we need to work on, okay, and it arises. My favorite example is, you know, a woman who spent all her life, you know, ironing shirts for a living, you know. You know, so she goes to the monastery hoping to finally get some relief from, you know, this drudgery of her life. And what do they ask her to do? They ask her to iron sheets, you know, in the guest house. So she's faced right away with her suffering. And she begins to see that the problem is not the ironing the shirts or ironing the sheets, but with her own mind that judges that as less than adequate, it's less than whole. Okay, I'm sure probably each have your own example of how this has worked for you. So Dogen teaches us to practice the scriptures, okay, and look at the scriptures as pointing to our own spiritual question, our own spiritual problem. And for example, what we did this morning in the ceremony, one of the main ways we practice scriptures in the monastery or in our temples is through ceremonial. And generally, we don't learn a lot of scriptures. We don't spend a lot of time in scriptural study. We study the scriptures by living the scriptures. We take a scripture and use it again and again and again. Like, say, our daily office. We do the same scriptures every day. I've been doing those for I don't know how many years. Because I just keep penetrating deeper and deeper and deeper. My experience is that they continue to deepen. No matter how far you've gone, they continue to deepen. And that's why it's important to keep make use of them. So this morning's ceremony, we did the scripture of great wisdom. Okay, that's the scripture pointing to the very thing that Dogen says there's no gap, there's no space between form, we're all a form, and reality. Often it's translated as emptiness, but it's emptiness with a capital E. Okay, I'm going to call it reality with a capital R. There's no gap. There's nothing that separates each of us from that reality. There's no part of us that's not a part of that reality. There's simply reality. How do we realize that? How do we do something with that? How do we make that true? The scripture of great wisdom is used in, I think, all the Zen traditions and in Mahayana Buddhism in general as a very important scripture, because it's saying that again and again and again. That we translate reality as pure, but form is pure, pure is form. And we remind ourselves every day that's the case. And the way the scripture of great wisdom works is it keeps saying, well, it's not this, it's not that, no eye, no ear, no tongue, da da da. And it's not this, and it's not attainment, and it's not practice. It keeps pushing us. So we have to kind of let go of our intellectual constructs of what this means. And then the mantra at the end expresses the flow that the flow that we're already in and that we're hoping to realize and which we will realize. The going on beyond, always becoming Buddha. I was reading a new book on the scripture, Great Wisdom, since I've been here, and it's by a prominent Japanese scholar, writer, calligrapher, artist. And he said right there what we've always said, that it really means becoming. It's not a gone, it's a going. It's a going on beyond. And so we work with the scripture of great wisdom. It keeps taking away everything we can try to stand on. In the end, all we have is the flowing. Okay. Ceremony is about learning to flow. Daily life is learning about flowing. We do ceremonial in part because that shows us how to live our daily life, to give us examples of what the flow looks like, what the flow feels like, and the qualities that flow engenders within us. And that was, the next two selections of this morning was about those positive qualities. The scripture, Great Wisdom, tells us how to, the truth that everything is one. Okay? My experience is that that kind of wisdom just grows naturally from doing your meditation and training. I don't know that you can cultivate wisdom, or at least that's the only way I know to cultivate it, because as soon as you start thinking I'm going to cultivate wisdom, you've lost it. As long as you think wisdom is something than your ordinary daily mind, you're in duality. I find that just by doing your zazen, you know, as regular as you can, however much you can do, your wisdom grows. You don't have to worry about becoming wise. You know, if you just think about your own life and how you think about things, I think very rarely do we think, well, I'm going to cultivate wise discernment in this and do the wise thing. For me, it expresses itself more in the sense of what's the right thing to do, what's the good thing to do, what's the appropriate thing to do. I think as soon as we take wisdom and make it into something, we've lost it. Because it's not a something. Okay? As soon as we begin to use our knowledge, if you will, in a discriminatory way, we've lost the wisdom. Okay. So we use our knowledge in a non-discriminatory way. We make use of everything that's there. I mean, my teacher, Reverend Master G, used to complain about monks at the monastery. She said, they were going around with their brains in a sack. Yeah, they weren't using their common sense. They weren't using, you know, their eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind in daily life. We use the mind. We're grateful for the mind. That's why the last section we did of Dogen says your body is deserve your love and respect. Through their agency, the truth is practiced. We're trying to find the best use of how to use our mind. And just by doing your zazen, working on keeping the precepts, wisdom grows naturally. At least that's my experience. What Dogen does in the Shishogi, this was a compilation from the Shobo Genzo, the larger work that he did. The late 19th century, some people kind of wanted to put together kind of a short synopsis of Soto Zen. You know, what does your school teach? Yeah. So they drew bits and pieces from all the different chapters of the Shobo Genzo and made it into what we call the Shishogi. And it's really brilliant. The first chapter starts out with impermanence. Okay, the facts of impermanence. The second one goes into Sangha and our recognition that we're missing something. Okay, the third chapter then is about the precepts. Okay, and then the fourth chapter, we don't stop at the precepts because there's positive things that we do. There's positive things that we practice. And what he gives what are called the four wisdoms. Okay? And you know he calls them four wisdoms. We don't throw wisdom out the window. We don't separate it off from wisdom. But rather, these four qualities, as he said, this is the practice of a bodhisattva. This is the practice of compassion. Those things we can cultivate. Those things are usually pretty evident to us. We all know what charity is. We all know what charitableness is. We all know what generosity is. We all know what tenderness is. That's the love of a parent for his child, speaking in such a way. Benevolence, that's helping other people. We all know the value of that. Sympathy or empathy is something that if we're still, we can cultivate that. And then Dogen goes on in the fifth chapter about gratitude. And that's often considered the fifth wisdom. Okay? And by cultivating these things in daily life, we're practicing that scripture. By working on our Zazen and meditation and being still, we're cultivating the scripture great wisdom. Okay. And so it is with our other scriptures that we do. We're practicing what they're pointing to. Okay. They're the finger pointing at the moon. Okay. They're valuable. You don't want to cut off the finger. You know, you may need it again someday. Or someone else may need ask you to use your finger to point to the moon. Okay. So those are, I think, the three points I wanted to make. One is that Dogen teaches us how to practice scriptures, you know, how we make use of those in our tradition. The second is the importance of, it's an existential effort. It's a spiritual, personal effort that we need to understand what these scriptures are pointing to. They can help us, you know, with our suffering. It's just not an intellectual thing that we're trying to figure out. It's a personal, it's a life and death matter. You come down to it. Okay. And the last thing was just the examples of that we did in the ceremony this morning of how you can practice the scripture great wisdom, you know, and how the practice of that are the very truths that we want to know and that we come to know. The scripture great wisdom, no duality, you know, all is one reality. The chapters from the Shishogi, how to practice compassion. Okay. Compassion is something I find that, whereas wisdom we don't, I find this, I don't find it something that I consciously cultivate. Compassion, though, is something that we can consciously cultivate. Okay? And the Four Wisdoms show us some of those ways. Let me think if there's anything else I want to mention. I gave the people who were here for the Dharma weekend a short writing I did on what I call contemplative reading. And it's about how to read scriptures, you know, and how to read Dogen, you know, how to read the Shobogenzo. Dogen is writing the Shobogenzo not for information. Okay. So it really doesn't work if you try to read it for information. You want to read it with your heart, what I call your heart, a meditative mind. It's not going to lend itself to intellectual understanding. You have to use your intellect, you know, to read it. Again, we're not trying, it's not anti-intellectual, but it's pointing to something that, if you will, kind of build on that or makes use of that, but it's pointing to something more. You know, there must be something more. It's pointing to that X factor in our lives. I mentioned in the, you know, short writing that it's helpful to recite scriptures out loud. Most of them were oral teachings in the beginning. They were meant to be heard. And when you hear them as well as say them, it engages more of your senses. It becomes more of a total experience. And it helps you understand the scriptures with your body, you know, as well as your mind. It's good to read them out loud if you can. It's good to, you know, work on the same ones. Okay. Don't worry about not understanding them, okay? Because something's going in there. There's a really funny story told about Suzuki Roshi at the San Francisco Zen Center. There were two of his disciples who would always complain because they sat at the back of the room and they could never hear what he was saying, you know. They would complain, you know, they weren't hearing the teaching, you know. What good was it doing them because they couldn't hear it? And then, you know, a few years after Suzuki Roshi's death, you know, they comment to each other, you know, I'm beginning to hear those lectures. Yeah. So something's going in. Something's being taught. You may not verbally understand it at the time. Don't worry about that. Just read it with the heart of faith. Another thing that can help with reading scriptures is make it a little ceremony. Not necessarily you have to do anything, but sit down, offer incense, you know, and then read, you know, for a certain amount of time or one scripture, and just really devote your concentrated mind to that for just that amount of time. Okay. And dedicate the merit of that to other beings. Okay, that's another really important point that brings the scripture alive. It's not just for you. You're reading this for all beings. Okay, it's not a selfish endeavor. It's not just about you understanding. It's about everything under understanding. I think if there was anything else on that. Oh, I think that pretty much covers it. And again, the quantity is not important. You know, it's not how much you've read, but how well you've read what you've read. Again, the mind with which you read it. That's the important thing. That's what opens up the scriptures to us. And, as Tobin says, everything is a scripture. Okay, everything. You know, Dogen really, in some ways, is common with many Japanese Zen masters, or Chinese too, probably, but they're really a lover of nature. You know, they try to set their temple in a beautiful natural setting like this, because there's no less artificiality, there's less things made by people. Okay, the truth is just as it is. So Dogen is often talking about mountains and rivers. He even has a discourse in the Shobogen Zen specifically on that. You know, it's the discourse on mountains and rivers. It's the scripture on mountains and rivers. And these are some of the ways that he explores learning from everything. Learning from nature, learning from your neighbor, learning from your family, learning from your own mind. Everything is trying to help us. Everything is teaching us. Everything is our own karma ripening for us to understand, resolve to do differently. Okay? To chart our future life with some intention and not just be bound on the wheel of just repeating the same thing over and over and over again.